Okay, today is September 11th, 2019. This is Gail Gall from Honduras 15, and I am interviewing Don Stearman from Honduras
13.
Group 13, who trained in Brockport and served in the Peace Corps between
1969 through 1972, September 1, 69, August 31st, 72.
Great. And we are in Lesterville, Missouri, and we will begin with probably the most common question is, why did you join the Peace Corps?
My uncle Horacio spoke Spanish, Aunt Rose spoke Hungarian, and they hosted some refugees from Hungary after the 1956 revolution. They hosted some refugees from Cuba after the Cuban Revolution. They also had several, they hosted some exchange students from Peru, and I became fascinated with Latin America. I took Spanish in high school and was relatively good at it. Then after 3 years of college as a physics major, I decided I wanted to be a teacher, and they had a program in which they were recruiting teachers. I would get a teaching certificate, and I would get a assignment in Honduras or Peru, which was all the things I wanted at that time. So that was an offer I couldn't refuse. We were also great admirers of President Kennedy, and the Peace Corps always sounded like a good idea to me.
Great, great. Before joining the Peace Corps, you talked a little bit about your aunt and uncle and their activities. Any other childhood or educational or other experiences that you think contributed to your joining the Peace Corps?
Well, I was the oldest of eight children. The house was getting kind of crowded. And when I was in college, I was working three different jobs, and this would be a way to kind of break that pattern. I could get out of town and finish up my education at Brockport State.
That was quite the, I assume then that getting the teaching certificate was a big motivating factor.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
We also had, we had to take the 18 hours of education courses.
Mm-hmm.
We took Spanish every semester because we were going to be teaching teachers. So we had to do this efficiently.
So was your degree then from Brockport?
My degree was from Brockport. It was a Bachelor of Science in Physics.
Okay. All right. Great. So how did you hear about this offer about the Peace Corps?
I think I saw it in a brochure or in an advertisement.
And where were you studying before that?
I was at Loras College in Dubuque, Iowa. It's a small Catholic men's college.
What was the name of it?
Loras.
L-O-R-A-S.
Word that in Spanish for parrots.
Oh, right, yes.
It was named after a bishop who was one of the early bishops in the town.
Ah, okay. And so your training was actually part of an undergraduate degree program.
Yes.
And did you have any training specifically related to Honduras, or was mostly the language around, you had intensive Spanish, right?
Also, the spring break before our final summer, they arranged a trip for us to Honduras to spend a week there. They didn't want to invest in another summer of everybody and then have people drop out right away. So they took us to Honduras. I got off the plane in Tegucigalpa, got on another plane right away to San Pedro Sula, got on another plane to Santa Barbara. So I went from a four-engine to a big two-engine prop to a DC-3 like my dad flew in the Second World War, where he was a navigator radio operator. So it's really an interesting progression of aircraft.
Yes.
So I spent several days in Santa Barbara with Craig Wanky, who is a Peace Corps volunteer, and ate Wiki 8 and got to visit a couple of other places, saw a couple other volunteers, and I realized this was going to really change me.
You realized then, yeah.
Yeah, but I still liked it.
You still, okay, all right. So you really had more prep than those of us who didn't get there until we were ready. So this question is a little inappropriate about like your reaction when you were accepted, but basically when you decided to change and study at Brockport, was there much of a reaction among your family and the people that were close to you?
Well, not really. My parents were supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, the family admired John Kennedy. We thought that the Peace Corps was a good idea.
Yep, yep. And so, did you have a preference aside from Latin America?
Not really.
Okay. So was there any particular people trained for this Peace Corps assignment, this Peace Corps program at Brockport, that focused on you becoming teachers in Latin America?
I don't understand.
Well, was there aside from the general teaching, learning how to teach, were they teaching you how to teach in Latin America? Much cultural information and things like that?
We had several of our language teachers were from Latin America.
Okay.
And so there were times when we would have discussions on the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But we were trained as a group. Most of the specialty classes, it was all the Peace Corps cohorts. So the education psychology, the developmental psychology, the teaching methods.
Mm-hmm.
The only people in the room were the instructor and Peace Corps trainees.
And how many people were in your group?
It started out with 50.
Uh-huh.
And 25 went overseas.
And so there was a slow attrition over...
Several people got offers for graduate school and decided they'd rather do that. People dropped out little by little.
Yeah, okay, all right. Do you think the training adequately prepared you for what you were going to be doing?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think it did.
And were there any particular Honduran host teachers with you?
Not at Brockport. Alicia, I think, is a Honduran. Demilo, our Spanish teacher, my Spanish teacher, is a Costa Rican. And we had a couple of visitors down at Rosa de Ortiz, was from Honduras. I forgot exactly what role she played at Brockport. She was there for the last summer.
Okay, all right.
She later became a interim director in Honduras.
Oh, all right. Good, good. So your initial entry into the country, would that be going back to the trip to Santa Barbara and
yeah.
your that impressions
we,
there?
Week we spent there, yes.
So how did, let's get a little bit more picturesque about like what the physical environment was like that struck you. And
The first thing that struck me is they had only electricity only about 5 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
2 hours right before sunrise,
mm-hmm.
and then 3 hours starting at sunset. So electricity went off like at 9 or 9:30. The place was very quiet. At night there was very little vehicle traffic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, also the fact that the water was not on all the time, so there was a large pila to store water in. So when the water did come on, Craig would fill it up, and we would hope that he would come on again before he had to fill it up again.
Yes, yeah.
So the water was just an issue. Not being able to drink the water was an issue. They had to boil it first.
Mm-hmm.
This is before bottled water, so.
Did you have those iodine, the tablets to put in?
We had iodine tablets in case we couldn't get boiled water.
Yeah, yeah. And did you meet any Honduran teachers while you were there?
Not on that visit.
Okay. And when you came back now as a volunteer, where were you assigned?
I was assigned at the National Teachers College, the Escuela Superior del Profesorado.
Okay.
And I got there in the middle of the semester. So the first class I taught was a 5 or 6 week evening class for elementary school teachers to try to teach them some science. Meanwhile, I was told this is what you're going to teach next semester, so I had time to find the equipment I wanted to use in the teaching, and I had time to develop some physics laboratories.
Oh, and did Peace Corps help facilitate any of that for you?
That was all done with the school.
With the school. And how did you feel about the resources that the school had?
They had a whole cabinet full of stuff, mostly from Europe. And the instructions were in Czech or Polish, which made it hard to understand, but they were, but I could figure out what most of it was. The thing was, a lot of the physics being taught at that time was mostly by memory. You would tell them formulas and they would regurgitate them back. So I was trying to get more hands-on stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
And so this caused a little bit of an uproar because students were used to memorizing stuff and then regurgitating it instead of doing experiments. And so some of the students complained to the director, and then we had a long discussion about what really science is. Well, the nice thing was, 3 semesters later, one of the Frenchmen was assigned to teach optics. There was also French volunteers there. And the students complained that all he was giving them was memory.
Uh-huh.
So they had to come over to like the experimental side of things. We did things like a contest to figure out how to protect an egg so you could drop it off the third floor balcony.
Oh, and yes,
have it survive the fall. We did the Galileo's experiment. We dropped stuff on the third floor and see which one hit the ground first. It seemed to always hit tight. And I had some tricks about how do you get a piece of paper to fall the same velocity as a book. So you put a piece of paper on top of the book, so the book knocks the air out of the way. So those type of experiences, the students were flabbergasted that they could do these things. There was one time in class, this is how we break through this. I told them, now, Plato said, heavy things fall faster than light things, right? Right. Was Plato right? Oh, of course, he's a smart guy. Then there was the question, Galileo says, heavy things and light things fall at the same rate. Is he right? Oh yes, Galileo was right. So I wrote down that these people disagree with each other. They can't both be right. You tell us, Prof. Well, me? Am I Galileo? You know, am I Plato? And somebody says, let's do an experiment.
So you really were able to change the perspective of teaching and learning.
I did. And several of those students went on to get their PhDs in physics.
Awesome. That's really impressive.
A couple became directors of the university. And they, when I visited there on my Fulbright, they still had in the library the physics journals that I had gotten monthly when I was a Peace Corps volunteer. They still found them useful.
I bet, yeah. That is great. And how did the work day work for you in the daily and the where you lived and things like that?
Well, I lived about a 20 or 30 minute bus ride from the school.
Mm-hmm.
So typical work day, I'd have to be out catching one of the minibuses about 7:30 or 8 o'clock, take the trip across town from Comayagüela to Tegucigalpa. And then the school day usually ended mid-afternoon. When I had an evening class, it would usually be just one day a week. So the evening classes were mostly the primary school teachers trying to get a teaching certificate. A lot of the teachers did not have teaching certificates at that time. So the whole project was to try to get every teacher in the Honduras to have a Honduran teaching certificate.
Okay, that so you did have a goal, like a...
That was the big overall plan.
Yeah, yeah. And were the teachers who, were they selected based on merit or any particular qualifications?
I'm not sure how they were selected.
Yeah.
I mean, I was given a roster, and these are the teachers, this is what you're supposed to teach them.
And what was your impression of them?
Some were very good. They had, but it was all of this being used to memorizing stuff.
Yeah.
I went out to a visit with a teacher supervisor. He says, today you're going to see the anatomy of a fish. And I says, oh, why? He says, that's what this guy always teaches when I come to observe him. And the students were very good at copying down into their cuadernos exactly what the teacher told them.
Right.
But instead of going out and getting a fish and chopping it open to see what it looked like, they would draw all these, label all these parts, and they would all look the same. So this is.
So there was no fish for them.
It was trying to break the rote learning.
Yes.
Trying to get people to observe and draw conclusions.
So basically the scientific method.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
They would memorize the scientific method and then not use it.
Hmm. And did you have any colleagues in among your other professors or teachers that you developed a relationship with?
Oh, we get invited to all the parties.
Yeah.
Arturo Suarez taught math.
Oh, really?
Did you know him?
Yeah, he was assistant director.
Yeah, no, okay. I'm picturing somebody who looks like it.
Oh, okay.
Marco Tulio Mejia. I can't remember all the names now. It's been 50 years, so
yep.
It's kind of jumbled up. But the mathematics teacher and I got along real well. He was also trying to teach new methods. He had just gotten his master's in mathematics from the University of Florida.
Okay.
So he was trying to get people to think mathematically differently. The other physics teacher and I didn't get along real well. He was kind of standoffish. I think he felt threatened, but I was replacing somebody who had been teaching physics and who was in the States to get an advanced degree. So I was put into a slot that was already there. I was substituting for
it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But I got invited to the teachers' parties. I played with the faculty against the students in soccer.
Uh-huh.
I coached the basketball team. We developed a photography club, and I taught how to develop film and how to make photos.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the students came with initiatives on this, asked how we could do this. They found out I knew something about photography, and there was a dark room in the school with equipment that was not being used. The only thing they needed was a camera, so I lent them $30 for a camera, and they paid me back with money they collected by taking each other's ID cards. You needed ID pictures for all kinds of stuff in Honduras, and the students found out they could do it cheaper than having it done on the street.
Cool.
So the students were a pretty cool bunch. They took a lot of initiative, but most of them were college age or a little older. Some were married. They got into the Escuela Superior through a competitive exam.
Okay.
And they all had scholarships, and so that was to them this was, they had high motivation to do well and stay there.
Great, great. What about your vacation time, your work and living arrangements?
Okay, I got married about 4 months after I got in country with a Peace Corps volunteer in a different group. She was in group 15.
Mm-hmm.
She was a registered nurse. And so we'd leave about the same time in the morning for our jobs. Sometimes we'd be on the same bus for a while. And we'd get off about the same time. Well, we didn't have a refrigerator for the first year, but we could get cold stuff from across the street, or we bought something on the way home.
Uh-huh. Did you have an apartment or a house? Or?
We had what's on the front of the block looked like, you know, one solid wall except with doors in it.
Mm-hmm.
And some had windows. They were painted different colors. They were different heights. But they were all, there was no gaps in it. It was kind of like being in a trailer where you walk in one end and then the other end was the bathroom and the pila and the small patio.
Okay.
And so there was a living room, a dining room, a kitchen, and a bedroom. And there was a volunteer leaving the country just about the time we were setting up house, and he was a very large person and he had a very large bed. He sold it to us at a bargain, so we had a bed almost as big as the bedroom.
And did you guys take any trips?
Well, for our vacations, we went to Guatemala, we went to Nicaragua, we went to Panama a couple of times. A couple of Linda's friends came to visit us, and we met them at the airport, got on the same plane, went to Panama,
mm-hmm.
took a bus back from Panama, stopped at Punta Arenas in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So we take our vacations out of town.
Okay. All right. And did your relationships with Peace Corps staff or change over time or?
Well, when we got into country, the director did not approve of us getting married.
Oh.
But he was replaced within a month by another director, that was Henry Reynolds. And Henry Reynolds, we went in to talk to him. He looked at the director's guidebook.
Mm-hmm.
The director should frown upon this. So he frowned. And then he wished us good luck.
That's great. That is great. So did you extend for a third year then? Did I hear properly that you were there for 3 years?
Yeah.
Okay.
What happened was we figured that I was just getting to learn things well.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, they were sending in a new physics teacher. So I stayed around with him for a while.
So you had a team of teaching? Or?
Well, he taught different classes, but I was able to tell him where everything was and how to do certain things.
Oh, good. Was that the fellow that had gone away to study?
No, he was still studying.
Okay. So if you look back on your tour of service, who knew there'd be someone mowing the lawn today? What do you think were your main accomplishments?
Well, I think I did help break rote learning, at least in physics. And we threw a science fair 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't any prizes, but I gave the students an assignment to do a project and then to discuss or at least do an exposition of what they learned.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some very good ones. One person, I gave a brochure of, this is what corn ears look like if they lack this nutrient or that nutrient. And she went out and found corn ears that looked just like the pictures.
Oh, cool.
And so this is what, that kind of thing was very useful. Well, the students thought this was such a good idea, they organized a science fair for Tegucigalpa. And so they went out and got prizes for this, for the best presentations. They did all the judging.
Awesome.
And then schools outside Tegucigalpa said, wait a minute, why don't you have this for us too? So for a few years there, they had regional science fairs. And this is something I started with the Escuela Superior, and these being all teachers, they went out and did it their way.
Yeah, yeah. And do you have any regrets or feelings of things you didn't accomplish?
I did. I usually don't set a lot of goals. I mean, I try to do the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
If I back when I ran track, then I would try to break a certain time. But when you're trying to teach, how do you, I mean, it's hard to, we didn't have any tests that students took, you know, it's, I don't think I had any real regrets of things I didn't accomplish. I didn't have any unreasonable expectations.
And so how did your Peace Corps experience influence the future?
Well, I probably wouldn't have gotten into Stanford if I hadn't been in the Peace Corps.
Wow.
There was a return volunteer there who put an ad in the Peace Corps newsletter looking for graduate students. And this was in the geophysics department at Stanford. And I had just read a report in Time magazine about earthquake prediction.
Mm-hmm.
And Linda, my wife, had gone to Peru to help pick up after the 1970 earthquake in Peru. And she came back with some interesting stories. So I thought it would be a very good idea to learn how to predict earthquakes. So when I applied to Stanford, a couple of my references at Brockport told me that Stanford's a good place. If you get a chance, go there. I applied some other places too. A couple of those offered me an assistantship, and Stanford didn't, but they accepted me. And so we counted our pennies, and Linda was going to get a job. She already had talked to Stanford Hospital, and they said they'd take her. So she was going to work and support me in school. After I got there, they gave me a job of changing the diaper on the seismograph, something I'd done back at Loras College. And I did a good job at it. I went out in a couple of projects. On one of them, they were building a concrete block house to house some instruments next to the San Andreas Fault. And I was the only one there who knew how to build concrete block houses, because we had done that on the farm. And so the guy who took me under his wing preferred hard work to lazy brilliance. And so I worked with things that took a lot of work and had a good time there and learned a lot. So, but I wouldn't have gotten in if I hadn't been in the Peace Corps. I don't think I would have.
Yeah. So we're almost to the top of it. And one of the questions, this is, it's how do you assess your service in light of Peace Corps' three goals? And the three goals listed here are A, provide technical assistance where requested, B, to promote better understanding of Americans, and C, to promote better understanding of other people by Americans. So we'll just go back to the top of the list in terms of the goal of providing technical assistance where required.
In an academic setting, either you teach the class well or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I did well in that. Especially since when I go back for later visits, I am warmly greeted by my former students.
Isn't that great? Yes. And to provide better understanding of Americans?
I know we did have a lot of discussions on cultural differences. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was protests against the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And the students would take me to the protest, but we'd stand in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said if they see a gringo up in front, somebody would come up and hit you. And then also,
because you were a gringo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a 6'2", so I stood up above everybody else. We also played a group of Americans played in the National Basketball League in Honduras.
Right.
And I was one of the better Spanish speakers, so I got elected to be the representative that went to all the meetings of the league teams. And that's where I learned a lot of the cultural differences. For example, at in Tegucigalpa, there were groups of, we call them Arabes, and they were mostly Palestinians.
Oh.
There were also a group of Jews. And they had businesses that competed, and one of the teams was mostly Arabes, another one was mostly the Jews. And I hadn't realized that until I went to those meetings, that there were those kinds of social or cultural differences.
Yeah.
Later I learned a lot more about the Lebanese and Palestinian influence in Honduras. I went to a geographer's meeting about 20 years later, and someone was discussing how the culture of the Palestinians was to help other people out. If you're successful, you give loans to your businessmen. Yeah. So I hadn't realized that that's the way it was working there.
In the North Coast, they called the Lebanese and Palestinians Turcos. And the Latinos would put a little tone in their voice when they talked about the Turcos. But that was, so I didn't...
And they also used that term.
Yeah, yeah. And so in terms of promoting better understanding of other people by Americans?
Well, I think I learned an awful lot about Latin America. Mm-hmm. I knew, for example, during the Salvadorian conflict that we weren't getting the straight scoop from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan was claiming that there were arms being smuggled overland from Nicaragua to mm-hmm. El Salvador. Well, if I went out on a ride in the Campo, a month later they would ask, anybody see a big gringo? I was a tall, skinny guy riding them. You know, people out there see things. You can't sneak it by.
Mm.
And if there would have been arms being smuggled, there would have been evidence. People would have seen it. There would have been witnesses. So I understood a little bit about that way at that time, that we're just not getting the straight scoop. Somebody's mm-hmm. lying.
So do you think that there was some link into how the Hondurans felt about Americans?
I really can't assess that.
Okay, all right.
Well, the fact I got invited to their, we got invited to their parties. I got invited to join a local softball team.
Mm-hmm.
Arturo Suarez got us into there. I think he wanted some ringers there, because we were pretty good hitters.
He was Peace Corps staff at that point.
Yeah, he was Peace Corps staff.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting for me to hear that influence of sports participation.
Yeah, I think I would coach the basketball team at the Escuelas de Pidior, but then when we went out to visit another school, I'd have to be referee. And so I would have to tell students to, you five start, and after 5 minutes you come in, and then I had to go out and be referee. I'm glad they were friendly games.
Yeah. Well, and they trusted you to be the referee.
I was the only one who knew the rules that well.
Oh, that's important. So have you continued any involvement with your country of service or contact with people from that country?
I made about 7 or 8 trips to Honduras between 1993 and 2002. One of my graduate students did a thesis based on work he did in Honduras. He did a land use study in order to help protect water quality for one of Tegucigalpa's major reservoirs.
Mm.
And this became important because it prevented the dumping of a lot of sewage into the basin. He was Panamanian, he spoke Spanish, and he went back to Panama and is teaching in one of their technical schools now.
Oh, great.
So I've been in touch with him from time to time. I brought a Honduran geologist to Toledo. And he did a thesis there, and he went back to Honduras with a master's degree from Toledo. I think he's teaching at a couple of different schools there, the Unitec. And then when I went on a Fulbright to Honduras, I spent a semester at the Universidad Pedagógica. I taught geographic information systems. And at that time, Mario was working for COPECO, which is the Honduran equivalent of FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
And I investigated a half dozen geological hazards. And a couple of them I wrote up as reports for the, I delivered them to the Geological Society of America at meetings. So it was very interesting to go back after so many years and now with some geological experience to be able to read what's going on.
Yeah.
When I was a Peace Corps volunteer, I couldn't see all the stuff I can see now when I read geology. And I think it was useful.
Great. So this is just this big open bucket question about what has been the effect of your Peace Corps service on your life.
Well, it really changed my life. I wouldn't have gotten into the grad school I got into.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I got really close. We've had our rough spots now and then, but usually she's also a very generous person. And you can tell when you watch her work that, and she learned enough Spanish that when she was in Toledo, she would have Spanish-speaking clients.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was on the home care.
Yes, yeah.
So it really helped make me what I am.
Great, great. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I've met Peace Corps volunteers on some of these trips, and I think they're having a lot harder time doing their job. Their living allowance is probably not enough.
Oh.
I know the prices have gone up and so on, and they seem to have they pulled Peace Corps out of Honduras now because it's got too dangerous. So I think the Peace Corps, we were there in a golden era.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a time when relationships were quite close. I think in the 1980s, with the U.S. involvement in Central America, Americans really aren't well liked in a lot of places there anymore. I found out that with some of the contacts I had as a Fulbright.
Mm-hmm.
But by then, I'd become a little better knowing my way around.
Great, great. Well, this has been very, very good. You're obviously very comfortable with speaking, and we're ahead of time. So is there any other thing that you'd like to say?
I really think that service to others is a good way to develop your own character,
uh-huh.
your own skills. You still try to get involved with, and in university it's becoming formal. We now have service learning projects.
Right, yeah.
So most of the ones I get involved with, I'm a gardener, so I give advice on gardening and so on.
So it fits what you're interested in and
yeah.
your strengths.
Yeah, and also I've gotten involved with a number of environmental issues.
Uh-huh.
Trying to stop a deep injection well for liquid waste in Michigan, looking at the loss of well water when they pumped it out of a quarry in Michigan. I've been having lunch in more landfills than you can believe, but that's also off working with engineers to solve human problems.
Great. I like that. Working with engineers to solve human problems. It sounds like a motto.
Well, the motto is the one that John Hull, the engineer, says. Tell me what the bad news is and I'll fix it.
Great, great.
I'm the one that finds out what the bad news is. The geologist who investigates what's going on underground. And then he'll fix it, and he usually does. A lot of my former students work for him. So I see my students out there in the environmental field. Some are partners in the companies.
Yeah. Great. So you've helped contribute to a new generation of leaders.
Well, a new generation of problem solvers.
Problem solvers. Good.
Yep.
Okay, I think we can finish up. So this is Gail Gall finishing the interview with Don Stearman on September 11th, 2019 in Lesterville, Missouri. Thank you very much.